This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. The Detroit Free Press recently reported inmates at a prison in the Upper Peninsula protested because of the meals provided by the food vendor. Basically, the inmates just stopped eating the food. Michigan Department of Corrections says until now, things have been going pretty well with this second private food contractor, Trinity. The first, Aramark, and the state of Michigan parted ways after complaints about maggots found in the kitchen, Aramark employees bringing in contraband for inmates, or being too familiar with the inmates, up to and including having sex with them. But inmates are not the only ones not happy about these private food service companies. In research by a scientist at the University of Michigan, corrections officers say it's become much more difficult and dangerous because the private food service companies don't understand the implications of not doing the job right. Roland Zullo is with the Institute for Research on Labor, Employment, and the Economy. He joins us now. Before we get to the corrections officer's concerns, your introduction outlines the case that the state and the state economy have likely gained nothing by privatizing the food services for the prisons. Could you briefly explain that?
Yeah, probably the main reason why this was not an economic winner for the state of Michigan is when the food was under state control, virtually all the purchases of food and equipment and supplies had to come through Michigan businesses. With privatization, that restriction was lifted. The contractors that came in had sole supplier agreements with companies outside this state. Michigan Department of Corrections spends anywhere from $35 to $38 million annually on food and supplies. So we lost that money. We lost that revenue that could have gone to local businesses and farms.
Okay, well, that kind of really takes a bite out of that savings that we were talking about. Let's talk about your discussions with the corrections officers. They stressed in these focus groups that food was central to how the prison operates. If there's not enough food, if there's not equity in food, in other words, everybody gets the same stuff on the tray, if the food's not served on schedule, it can affect everything else that happens during the day. Why is that?
Food is so central to prison life because the whole agenda of the prison, the daily routine of the prison revolves around food. You have to keep in mind a chow hall might fit, say, 200 to 300 inmates, but there could be 1,000, 1,200 inmates in the facility. So inmates come in and sit down in shifts. And if the food isn't prepared on time, then it tends to back up all the other programming that takes place within the prison system. And that frustrates inmates. It affects the rehabilitation programs that have to take place. It affects all prison life. So the food has to be brought in a punctual way. It has to be effectively delivered. In terms of equity, what can frustrate inmates is if they're in the food line and they see different amounts of food given out to different inmates, and usually this is done as some form of compensation to friends or a form of a way to secure protection or some kind of payment. So you have to watch the line very carefully to make sure that the food is fairly distributed.
And this is something the food service leaders under state employment before the private contractors kept an eye on.
They were very wary of that, yeah. What perhaps a lot of listeners don't realize or perhaps appreciate is that in the prison system, it's the inmates that cook the food and the inmates that serve the food. The food service leader, the person who was formerly employed by the state and now it's done by contract, that person is responsible for overseeing the inmates that perform these tasks. If you don't control various aspects of the food prep and management of the kitchen area, then what happens is inmates gain control over this. And one of the outcomes is when you begin to lose control is that inmates serving the food then get some power to distribute food to their friends
sure,
that come
food,
through the line.
Food is power in the prison, I would assume.
And it becomes more powerful if the food quality declines. If the quantity and quality declines, which is what happened here, then having access to the kitchen becomes even more prioritized.
Now, I want to ask you, these focus groups of these corrections officers around the state, this was a period while Aramark was still in and not while Trinity, the second private food vendor, is in. Is that correct?
That's right. We conducted the interviews from April through June of last year.
These corrections officers at many of the correctional facilities across the state told the same kinds of stories about the food. Sometimes the recipes were shorted, especially if it involved expensive things like hamburger or thinning out soups or gravy with water to make it stretch to save money. And I think a lot of people will think, oh, it's just prisoners, who cares? But that causes problems for the corrections officers and the morale of the place.
Yeah, all those things happen. The food quality decline, sanitation decline, which could have been responsible for some of the illnesses that happened in the prison. One of the most frustrating practices by the contractor for the officers is they engaged in what was called progressive cooking. And what that meant was that they purposely didn't make enough food, hoping that not enough inmates would show up. But if more inmates showed up, then they had to quickly try to come up with some additional food. What resulted is often shortages. And shortages would happen most frequently with the last shift of inmates coming through the chow hall area. That last shift in most facilities is usually the highest ranked inmates in terms of risk. So you can imagine if inmates are expecting a certain meal, you know, a popular meal like chicken or waffles or something, and there isn't enough, and they file in and they're told, well, you're not going to receive that meal. Instead, you're going to receive some less attractive substitute. That would often raise conflict. Then the officers have to engage in de-escalation of that conflict to prevent there from being fights or violence. So that was dangerous.
These corrections officers also say the kitchens were so dirty that they had to start putting crews of inmates to work after Aramark, the private contractor, would finish each day. And these cleaning crews were supervised by corrections officers who have other things better to do. That's not factored in when you're comparing the cost of state-operated versus private sector food services. So how was Aramark not required to keep these prison kitchens more clean?
Well, they were required by contract, but as a practical matter, they let that go. When the food service was under state control, the facilities had a late-night shift, which would be managed by a food service leader and a team of inmates, and they would go in and clean. They would also bake goods and get food ready for the next day. And that took place under state control. That was one of the cost-saving measures eliminated with privatization. So the kitchens just were not clean enough with privatization. And the officers, along with a crew of inmates, had to come in some of the facilities now and kind of follow the contractor after they leave and clean up.
I've toured a couple of prison kitchens in my career. There's always the count of the kitchen utensils. I mean, you can imagine you don't want to lose track of a butcher knife. The corrections officers alleged the private sector food service managers were not as vigilant about the security issues, everything from not being sure where utensils were to not knowing where the lid of a metal can. They open a can, you've got the lid, it's got sharp edges, it can be used as a weapon. Things like that weren't kept track of very well, according to the corrections officers.
Yeah, and again, I think this is really an important point to underscore, that the workers who come in to do this, they come into a prison kitchen. They have to obviously understand how institutional kitchen operations work. They have to know how to plan meals, they have to know how to budget, get everything ready, and then cleaned up afterward. They have to know how to do all that. But layered on top of that is knowing how to do that in a prison system and knowing the prison rules and knowing safety protocol and following those protocol carefully. One of the examples that sort of highlights the difference between, say, what you might find in the free sector in a kitchen versus in a prison are the can lids. To cook food, they have these industrial-sized cans. And you open up those cans and there's a lid, and that lid is very sharp and it can be made into a very lethal weapon. Well, in the prison system, you have to inventory all those. You have to make sure you keep track of all those lids that can be smuggled out of the kitchen and made into weapons and brought into the general population. So issues like locked doors, inventorying not just things like can lids, but also chemicals, caustics that could be used as a weapon as well. That's very important in the prison system. And the officers just found those practices lax among the contract employees.
I want to ask you, because you know I'm a journalist, we like to verify things. Did you make any attempt to contact Aramark about these allegations that the corrections officers made all across the state?
Well, no. We did this without asking permission from Aramark or from the Department of Corrections. We were quite confident we would never get access.
Right.
So we just didn't go forward with that. But certainly an interesting follow-up question or follow-up study would be one that went and talked to the former Aramark employees about their experience as well.
Overall, what do these corrections officers feel should be done? I mean, is it more training of the private contractors, more assurances that inmates get the right amount of food, or something else?
Well, I think the officers would like to go back to a state operation, but in the focus groups, we asked about that, and very few expressed any kind of confidence that that would happen under the current political environment. But that was what they wanted first and foremost. Part of the problem with the training is the contractor experienced such rapid turnover that training became a huge cost. Very difficult to train people well enough to enter into the prison system and operate with huge turnover. So to give you a sense, the number of stop orders in the first year and a half.
Stop order means you stop an employee from a contract employee from coming in.
Yeah, stop orders were issued against the contract workers that usually violated some form of prison rule, such as overfamiliarity. And the stop order prohibits that person from working in any of the Department of Corrections facilities. Well, in the first year or so, there were something in the area of 300 stop orders issued, which is almost the number of FTE in the whole system. Now, on top of that, there are voluntary quits from people who took on the jobs, got there, and realized that it just wasn't worth it, that the pay wasn't high enough for the amount of responsibility and risk involved in the job.
So we're not talking about churn. We're talking about real turnover, like in
very
a couple
heavy,
of years.
Very heavy turnover. Very heavy. Almost 100%, probably close to 100% turnover in a year. And the skills you need to learn to function well in an institutional prison food environment require months to learn and years to become habitual. The protocol is quite intensive and quite extensive. So much of it is how you deal with inmates and how you respond to inmates. And it's about developing the maturity and confidence to do your job and also to manage these inmates.
This privatization of the prison kitchens was a decision made by the legislature, signed off by the governor. The first contractor and the state, we will say, parted ways after a number of incidents. We've got this second one, and it's not clear that the state's actually saving any money. Do you think that we'll see any kind of review based on your focus groups, your research here?
Well, I would hope so. I would hope that the people who pick up my report and read it treat it as a constructive document. Fundamentally, I think what happened in this case is that the jobs that were replaced, the state jobs that were replaced, were very much undervalued. The amount of responsibility and skill needed to go in and to do this work, it wasn't worth the $11 an hour or $12 an hour that the private contractor was paying. You needed to have jobs of professional status that allowed people to treat the job as a career and not just as a temporary position. And that was completely undermined by privatization. That has to be returned, you know, to rectify, you know, the situation there.
Roland Zulu is an associate research scientist with the Institute for Research on Labor, Employment, and the Economy at the University of Michigan. He compiled the research entitled Food Service Privatization in Michigan's Prisons, Observations of Corrections Officers. Thanks very much for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you, Lester.